Hello, everyone. This is Eugene Starks, NAHU president. Welcome to The Jump Off, where we take a big leap into everything leadership and NAHU.
Welcome back to another installment of the President's Podcast with Eugene Starks. And an extra special guest that's a little nearer and dearer to my heart than usual is David Contorno. Eugene, we got the man himself.
I know. I don't know how you were able to wrangle that. I mean, you know, it took some conspiring, though, because we're here at the U-Powered Conference. And I knew if I wanted to catch David, I could probably catch him at the conference that he's running. So maybe the whole conference is on fire. Nobody's talking right now because all of us are in here.
That's a good point. The two people hosting the conference are not at the conference. I hope it's going okay.
But one of us put a lot of things in place to make sure it goes well.
Not me. Exactly. Well, somebody did. And she put this in place so we could spend some time together. So, David, we're excited to have you here and glad to have you.
Thank you.
On the jump off. And so with that said, you know, what I'd like to do is jump off and just learn, David, a little bit about your background with NAHU. Because I will just say from my perspective and from looking out at people who kind of know you now, they might think, well, David's kind of a new member of NAHU and he kind of burst onto the scene maybe about 5 years ago or something like that. But little known fact, David, you've been a member since infancy, I think.
I don't know about that, but a couple of decades at least. I mean, when I moved down to North Carolina in 2007, and I was a longtime member up in New York prior to that. So I'd say about 20 years. And to be frank, my first couple of NAHU meetings were just debauchery. They were just parties. We were at casinos up in at the Indian reservations in Connecticut. So my first experience with any sort of NAHU conference was a very positive one, actually. But not a whole lot of function going on. But when I started to, some of the political environment, and this is still pre-ACA, some of the political environment started to change a little bit. And I started to realize that there's actually an opportunity through this organization to affect change. So I started to get involved up in New York. I didn't hold any leadership positions up there. But when I moved to North Carolina, I was on both the Charlotte board and the North Carolina board for several years and tried to get involved and tried to be part of the what's driving the association. I wound up getting a little frustrated.
Yeah, I was going to get into that. No, really, I want to get into that because I want people to understand that, you know, NAHU is not the perfect organization. It's not the perfect fit all the time. We don't always make the right dance moves. But the thing is the music keeps playing and we keep dancing and we eventually can get back in rhythm. But often it takes people like you that help us see and understand that we missed the mark on something. So you know, I know because I was part of those conversations, there were some things we were doing that was frustrating you. There were, quite frankly, some things you were doing that was frustrating us.
Yep, agreed.
And we had to figure out, okay, good person, good people, where do we need to connect and how do we need to help each other grow? So share a little bit of that.
Sure. Well, you know, I started to take this course correction in my career because, listen, we all know if we're dealing in health insurance in any way, we know it's getting more and more painful. It's hard to deny that from any perspective you sit at. And for whatever reason, it hit a breaking point for me, I think a little sooner than for other people. And I started to ask, why? Why is this occurring? Why do we have this model of just excess and ridiculous cost and atrocious outcomes? And everyone I asked blamed someone else. And it didn't matter if I went to a hospital CFO or a carrier CEO or the NAHU leadership. You know, everyone pointed the finger at everyone else. And I got frustrated with that. And so I asked myself, what can I do? What's within my control within this really messy, opaque healthcare system? And the only thing that I could think of was my compensation. And I realized that I was paid in a way that to me felt like the worst job I did at what my clients actually wanted me to do, the more I was compensated. And so I changed the compensation model. And I realized by doing that, and this is kind of where there was a little bit of a fork in the road for me, because a lot of the NAHU membership is largely dealing in fully insured plans. And sometimes there's no alternative to commission. And they, you know, some people got very defensive of how they make money. It's a personal thing. I get it. I took a very, you know, pointed approach at first. I don't know that I regret that because I think it was like, you know, let's rip the bandaid off and then get a little bit softer. I think it had some movement to it, but I think I've been markedly putting effort into being more inclusive. And what I recognized was that when I was in that model, I didn't think I was doing bad for my clients. I thought I was doing better than the other guys, even the big brokers. Like, I'm doing better and doing more for the client. But I realized that when you're paid in that way, the set of solutions that you even think to look at is narrow,
correct,
relatively speaking. And when you wind up getting paid, in our case, from the client, that box that you thought existed completely goes away. And, you know, a lot of people think that they have five or six carriers to deal with. But when you look at other alternatives to that, you realize there's hundreds or thousands of variations. And you actually get to flex your creative muscle way more than you can in a traditional plan. And so when I saw this and I quickly became passionate about it, I got very frustrated when others denied it or wouldn't
engage
in
that conversation.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely see that. And it is important to recognize, and I think that's one of the, you know, with your passion, I think one of the realizations you had is that for some people, markets are more limited, you know, and if you're working in the small, really small group space, you're largely stuck with these carriers. And, you know, I say that not to disparage carriers, but to say that, you know, smaller groups tend to have fewer options. But here's the other good side of that is that the carriers exist to allow employers that don't have the complexity, don't have the sophistication to transfer 100% of that risk and move on and then focus on the service or the product they're developing. So there's a vital role to that. But while there's a vital role for carriers to serve in a space, I think people misheard you early on to think you said we have to blow up all the carriers, which was not the case. But where we can, we have to blow up the model. And we were talking with David Smith in an earlier podcast about how we really blew up the model of leadership development for NAHU, for membership for NAHU, or membership financing model. There's a lot of things we had to blow up and will continue to blow up in NAHU in order to create a new model. And I think that's where you were. You were really setting the charges early on, which didn't mean you were going to bring down the whole house. But there are some things that need to be blown up.
Yeah. And, you know, listen, I took a very adversarial approach to the carriers because I firmly believe to this day, and there's nothing wrong with what I'm about to say, they exist to serve their shareholders. That's what every publicly traded company has to do. The problem is the way they serve their shareholders is contrary to not just the interests of their clients and their patients, but also contrary to their message out in the marketplace. And what frustrated me even more, at least initially, was I'd go to some of these conferences and who were the biggest sponsors of those conferences?
Yeah.
The carriers. And so it felt like a rigged system that I'm, you know, pushing against and never going to win. But I felt it was the right thing to do. I still feel it's the right thing to do. But I've recognized I can't, there's no way I'm going to make even any sort of measurable impact by myself. I can't be on an island alone. And the reality is that, you know, if you can engage just a few hundred brokers or consultants, you're probably engaging a few thousand employers and a few hundred thousand employees. Right. Now you can really start to make a difference. And recognizing that some people have limitations both in experience, in their thought process, and then regulatory. But one of the things I'd love to see happen is, you know, a lot of brokers that took an adversarial approach to what I said, well, we can't even remove commission. And in a lot of cases, that's true. I know it's filed with the Department of Insurance. You're getting paid whether you want to or not. And a lot of times you're getting bonuses, even if you're not recognizing what it takes to get the bonus. You just get a check one day. But there are people that came to me and said, David, I agree with you that that's not really aligned, but there's nothing we can do about it. And my response was, what do we go to CapCon every year for? Like, we go there to get in front of the people that are making these rules and these laws. Let's ask them. They say, listen, we want to change the way we're paid. And to me, that has so much credibility. It would be like if Congress today put in term limits and caps on political donations. They're never going to do it.
Right.
But let's figure out a way that we can win when the clients win in every way, not just that moral or ethical that a lot of us are trying for, but every incentive in every way possible, align it with what the outcome is that ultimately we all want.
Yeah, and I love that. And I love that you use the word moral. And, you know, we're not on a moral podium and we're not beating up people with our righteousness and morality. But to say that the conscience of so many of the professionals we work with in this industry, they all want to do the right thing. They want to do the right thing for the client. And yes, sometimes we're literally between a rock and a hard place. because a client with a fully insured carrier gets a 35% rate increase, and then none of the other carriers want to offer a plan of coverage. And it's a very uncomfortable position. You've all been there, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like there's no screws or bolts or anything to turn to alleviate the pain. And it's very frustrating. So I like the way you brought that up, that there is a strong, as I see it, very strong moral compass of people who are serving. You know, we know we're not serving employers. We're serving people that work for employers. Emma, you're just chomping at the bit, I can see.
I love poking the beast a little bit here. But I do want to point out that we're at a location right now where we're hosting the most diverse crowd. I mean, we have small group brokers here, self-funded Medicare brokers. We have Medicare brokers. And I think you've fostered a lot of that collaborative space for people. And we say things like inclusive and diverse. And it's truly what we've created here. And so at some point, you went from being angry about the current system and yelling about it. You know, you get to that point of frustration where you just have to scream about it. And I think you did that. Mm-hmm. And you got the consequence of it, right? But at some point, you sort of leveled out. I watched it happen with you.
Maybe influenced it a little bit.
Maybe.
Maybe.
But then I saw you start embracing. I saw you have conversations with David Mordo, who said, what are we going to do about the three-person dry cleaners in New York City? How are we going to help them? They can't do what David Contorno does, right? And I saw you start having conversations. I saw you start listening a little. I saw your anger temper down. Can you kind of tell our audience a little bit about how that really occurred?
Well, I know our conference has like literally just started, but I'm going to tell you one of the best compliments I've received so far. And it was from a very well-known member of NEHU. And I keep wanting to say Nehu, or now you've talked about Nahu.
I go back and forth. I'm all about diversity. I go back and forth.
Yeah.
But Dawn McFarland came out of the session with Marshall Allen and said, you know what, David, I love what you do and I love learning, but I just have struggled to apply any of what you guys do to my Medicare and individual clients. Mm-hmm. She said, this was the first time where I feel like I actually learned something that I can really bring value to my clients. I can help them for the stuff that wasn't covered, how to get that bill down to zero or something they can pay, even their deductibles and out of pockets, and how to help them with that. And she actually, one other time when we brought up some of the pharmacy to international, and she's like, oh my gosh, I can help my seniors get drugs overseas safely and ethically and much less expensive. So that was a huge compliment. If I could bring value to someone that at one point, and obviously Dawn and I have never had an adversarial relationship directly, but she's a commission-based Medicare individual broker, right? The same people that I at one point was sort of rallying against. And for her to come and say, I learned something that I can help those people with. Again, I don't know if I would have been able to get to that point had I not gone the path I'd gone.
Right.
But I'm so grateful to be here now in delivering that to people.
And look, we're grateful to have you here now in delivering that. And I've got a couple of thoughts here rushing through my head, so hopefully I can deliver them. One of the things is, particularly in the Medicare and the individual space, we need those carrier partners. But the other thing we can do is to educate the Dawns that, and I'll give you an example. My daughter, who's a school teacher and works, you know, state school plan in Mississippi, you know, state plan, self-funded plan. It's actually a pretty good plan. Everybody rails against it because it's got a high deductible and stuff like that. And I gave my daughter the good RX card because it'll be cheaper for her with her plan to use good RX to buy her routine medications. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of education we as brokers who have fully insured clients, we need to do is say, okay, here's the model. The carrier is going to cover this catastrophic risk for you. And it's 100% transfer once you hit that deductible. That's a beautiful thing. But there's things you can do. And it arises out of our understanding and our ability to communicate and deliver this message to our clients arises out of the friction that we had. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, kind of the coming apart and coming back together and saying, okay, so how can we apply some of those tools?
Yep.
Because fully insured is going to be there. And my hope is by our creativity, and I was talking to the Central Florida chapter of Health Underwriters a couple of weeks ago, and I said, we are at this unique moment in time where if we act, because right now we've got a Congress that is largely paralyzed and can't do anything, which I think as a rule is good for the country. Mm-hmm. But it's our time to implement the changes. I don't think all these Congress people, senators and representatives are sitting there heartlessly, trying to serve over their serfs, their minions. They don't have the knowledge. They see the pain, but they don't have the knowledge to fix it.
Yeah.
We've got this window of opportunity. And what you just described with Dawn is an example of how we can impact little changes that make a big difference for the clients we serve.
No one likes change. And I look at brokers in a similar vein to doctors, in a similar vein to politicians. I think any one of those groups, when they first got into their career, they were bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and they wanted to save the world. But then they get into the system where they're forced to make choices for me or for them, for me or for them. And some people always choose for them. Some people always choose for me. I think most people have some sort of ratio in between. But that's a horrible position to be in, especially as a doctor, right? Where you have to say, I either do what's right for me and my family or I do what's right for the sick patient in front of me. And those two things are contradictory to each other. That's a really tough position to be in. And so I started to really indict the system more than any of the people within the system.
And so that's an example where we look at direct primary care as a solution, and we put the doctor and the members really on the same side of the table, right? Mm-hmm. So that they have aligned goals and they're helping each other fulfill their goals, which is what we want.
Yep.
So I want to go back to something you said about compensation.
Mm-hmm.
I had early on in the business, and I've been in this a long time, mm-hmm. A broker said, well, we're in a recession-proof business because, we're getting paid a percent,
of something the employer has to pay.
Yeah, something.
They won't pay their electric bill sooner than they won't pay their health insurance.
So you're getting paid a percentage of the premium, and the premium goes up every year, so we get an automatic pay raise. And there was something about that that didn't settle well with me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, God, that's kind of icky. My business partner, he's actually was in line to be an HU president and actually bought our current TPA back in 97, and he was vice president, stepped out because he had a family and a business to run and never became an HU president, but he had a long history of serving. And this was in the 90s, and he had proposed then, David, he was probably scorned like you were scorned because he proposed that NHU adopt the position that we go to the carriers and ask them to strip out all commission and that we would get a fee just like attorneys and CPAs. And it failed miserably.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But everything in its time, because you look now, the people assembled here, the people that will be assembled in DC, Capitol Conference, you talk to them now and you'll hear a lot of those agents talk about, we do a fee structure.
Mm-hmm.
We do disclosure of what our fees are. There was resistance even way back in the mid-90s, and it just took a while to break that down. But to the extent that we can be out there, yes, Congress passed fee transparency, fee disclosure law.
Mm-hmm.
I've said this in Orlando. If we'd have been ahead of the game in doing that, there would have been no reason for Congress to address that.
Right, right. And that's the key because, we're teetering precipitously on the healthcare system breaking. And if it breaks, there's going to be massive change. And if that massive change happens to be Medicare for All, for example, or something similar, I think most of an ASU feels that that's not good for the country. But just think about it from a compensation perspective. I'm not going to say there's no opportunity for brokers or insurance agents, but it's going to be radically different in that model.
Correct.
So we almost have to self-correct and go through that change so that we can be the ones leading the change instead of the ones being told what that change is going to be. I say the same thing to doctors and hospitals. I'm like, hospital CFOs who are making so much money. I'm like, guys, your day of reckoning is coming. And if you don't recognize that and adapt and change in a way that changes the path we're on, then it's going to be changed for you and you're going to like that even less. And I know change is hard. I know.
Right.
But be the leader of the change so that you can be the take your experience and take your knowledge and do good for the country, do good for the patients, and do good for yourself as well at the same time.
That's why I see this U-Powered Conference, our Capitol Conference, our annual convention are such important opportunities. We draw in creative thinking and hardworking agents, brokers, consultants, whatever you want to call us. But the people we need to start bringing into our conferences – and you have a few here, are doctors and other healthcare providers. We've got to engage all of them in this healthcare delivery conversation.
Right. And they're as beat up by the system as a lot of other people, especially doctors. But I want to point out the absurdity that myself included has perpetuated at the employer level, where we go every year to an open enrollment meeting. And all we do is focus on the provisions of their insurance policy, correct, right? What's on the formulary? What's not? What doctor's in network? What your, when your deductible applies? When your copay applies? The analogy I use as to how insane that seems to me is if in the scope of teaching your children to drive a car, if you sat them down and went over all the provisions of the Geico policy and then you handed them the keys and said, go be a good driver, you'd be derelict in your duties as a parent, right?
Right.
But here we are giving them employees this unlimited credit card known as a health insurance ID card, unlimited by law.
Right.
And we're saying, let me go through all the provisions of that insurance policy. And then we're saying, go be a good patient. To not have clinical at these open enrollment meetings and these conferences, and I didn't feel this way always, but if you're not bringing the provider community in, who again is just as beat up, you're not really in healthcare.
Yeah. And I can speak for me. I really was really at the ground zero of creating the problem. And I say that because I work for an HMO. With the HMO, you know, and I would tease my wife. We have two daughters, two beautiful daughters, love them. We already had the two beautiful daughters when I went to work for the HMO in New Orleans in the mid-90s. But we had these plans that were ridiculously inexpensive. And there would be like a $100 deductible for, you know, a hospital admission. And I would tease my wife, said, we need to have another baby. It'll never be cheaper. It would have only cost us $100. But what we did is we insulated the members. Mm-hmm. We absolutely gave them the magic card. Mm-hmm. Don't leave home without it. Mm-hmm. Healthcare doesn't cost anything. Mm-hmm. Go pay $100 and have your baby. Forget about paying for college and weddings mm-hmm. that will come later. You know, it's all cheap now. Buy now.
Yeah.
You know, and we insulated the members from the cost of healthcare and engagement in healthcare. Yeah. Now, some good things we did is we brought in our primary care physician.
PCP Home.
PCP, yeah. PCP Home. We had the right idea that family members, you know, the employees, they didn't need to be their own doctor. Right. They didn't need to self-refer to the orthopedist.
They shouldn't.
Or to, right, they shouldn't, mm-hmm. you know, to all of these things. We had the right idea. We actually didn't have the technology or even the engagement of the providers.
Yeah.
Now, coming forward 20 years, because of the work of all of these people that are here at UPower and so many of the people that show up at our NHU conventions, we're having those conversations and we're engaging the providers. And it's a different conversation. It's not a magic card. Now, when we have the conversations, the direct primary care physicians we work with say, now there's a cost associated with this, right?
But you know what it is.
Right.
Up front.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and I guess it's the Beatles song, say you want a revolution, well, here you go.
Well, and the other thing is there's a lot of things that are done, I think, from a psychological standpoint that is perpetuated within healthcare and health insurance to make us not understand really kind of what's going on. And one of them, maybe among the most damaging, is this notion that our carrier is getting us a discount. And so then that leads you to think that there's someone paying the non-discounted price, which
correct.
Just isn't true in healthcare at all. And so you think the carrier's value is that discount, right? I paid less. But I try and tell people all the time, there's two ways to pay for healthcare. You can pull out of your wallet and pay for it now, or you can throw down your insurance card and pay for it later. But if you pay for it later, it comes with a pretty heavy interest charge on it. Those are your two options. The notion that healthcare is free, right, like we had when HMOs first came out, it's just not true. And furthermore, we think of health insurance differently than every other type of insurance.
Right.
We only want our car insurance to cover the low-frequency, high-severity things very infrequently. But health insurance covers that and all the day-to-day things too. So it's become such an integral part of the healthcare delivery, whereas Geico has nothing to do with delivering a car.
Right.
Right? And Northwestern Mutual has nothing to do with delivering a life.
Yeah.
But health insurance companies have integrated themselves so much that we look to them for permission on everything and they've become part of that delivery channel. It's not in any other type of insurance market.
Right. It's not. But I've run into exactly what you're talking about. I'll be at open enrollment and the person saying, I don't even know if I want to renew this year. I paid all this money and I never use it. And I would look at them and say, I'd love it when they asked it to the group and say, do you get to the end of the year and it's December and you realize I haven't used your homeowner's insurance, so you decide to set a fire in the kitchen?
You know? It's a good analogy.
Yeah. So it's the epiphany, you know, that it's there for when the catastrophic things happen. But a lot has to happen. It's very expensive. And I just tell people, premium is what you pay if you're sick. Your out-of-pocket is what you pay when you're sick. The goal is to minimize what you pay for the if you're sick and structure something affordable for you to pay when you're sick.
Yep. And a lot of people don't understand that the insurance price is the higher price paid in healthcare. If you don't have insurance, you're going to pay a lower price if you can afford it and have many more programs open to you for financial assistance if you can.
Well, I'm going to have to tie you to up a little here because, and I want to make a good point before I close it, because I feel like you guys could just talk and talk on this, but I want to point out something that might come across a little ironic, but here we have the bad boy of the industry who rah-rahed and rallied against a lot of the people who exist in NAHU today. And we have the current president of NAHU who are here having a very productive, respectful, aligned discussion. And so I just say that, you know, this is how important it is to be at these places, to talk to each other, to be open to having a dialogue and listening, because I think a lot of us are all trying to do the exact same thing. We just have to execute it a little differently depending on who we're working for, right? Like, who are we representing? David represents a different clientele than, you know, some other people in NAHU. Then Dawn. Excellent. Yeah. And so I think sometimes we're just not talking enough to each other to understand that we're really all working on the same goal. And I've really loved listening to you guys. I usually talk a little more, but I've really been enjoying listening to your conversation. So thanks.
Well, and hopefully all of our membership enjoys listening to the conversation, because some takeaways from this is to understand that if you're a member or you're thinking about being a member or you're thinking about dropping your membership, there's going to be something in NAHU that's going to be a disappointment. But there's also going to be a lot in NAHU that's an opportunity. So share your disappointment, share your frustration. That's what David did. Mm-hmm. Created dialogue, which has allowed all of us, David, me, NAHU, to cycle up and realize there's new opportunities for collaboration and support, and to continue to make a difference for our clients. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the pain that you are. I appreciate the champion that you are. Thanks for hosting the U-Powered Conference. We're so excited for NAHU to be a sponsor of U-Powered.
Thank you.
We want to champion our members who are helping to create a new industry that we can all perpetuate and serve our clients in. So thank you.
Thank
Amen.
You. Thank you for it's a big commitment to be president. You have a company to run, you have a family, and yet you're flying all over the place and doing meetings all the time to support that. So thank you for that volunteer work.
Sure. Thank you. Appreciate it.